I don't know about you, but there is a feeling that I get that is one of my favorite feelings. I get it when life is good. Not because I've won $1 million or even a small little prize or anything like that. It's not because I'm about to go on the dream vacation of my life. It happens often on Saturday mornings for me. Rich cup of coffee in hand. And I just wake up and I realize, wait a second. I got nothing going on today. I get to drink my coffee. I maybe am going to watch a little golf. I'm going to chill with my family. I'm going to putter around in the garage. No one really needs anything. And things are good with my boys and Kathy. We're at peace. Life is good. My boys come down. You know what I'm feeling? You know what I'm saying? When you just, I read Facebook posts every now and then. Someone will say, the night to myself with a nice glass of wine and a book. I go, they're feeling the same kind of feeling. Sometimes I'll hear people saying, I've got family coming in and we're all getting along. And they go, life is good. I hear people describe the same kind of feeling I have on those Sunday mornings. It's this feeling. They start describing the thing that it is going on around them that just gives them that sense of, I just want to keep this moment right here, right now. I describe it as weightless. Weightless. No burden, no pressure, just in that moment. I was surprised to witness it as much as I did when I was down in Guatemala. I saw it. I saw it in people. There was one afternoon, I was working my butt off with a large team of Guatemalan men who were hand digging out these holes that were going to house the tanks where the brown water and the sewage would all get treated. If you can imagine, by hand, they're digging out these massive pits. Some of them are loaded with rock, so they're hand chiseling away at the rock, loading up pails. 50, 60, 70 pound pails, hauling them by hand up ladders through an assembly line. And so all day, all we're doing is passing these heavy buckets, one guy to the next, one guy to the next. You hear the chiseling going away, shoveling. But these guys in this line are like constantly chattering with each other, talking. They speak a shiel. I have no idea what they're saying. So I'm just passing buckets, acting like I'm kind of knowing what they're saying, but I don't. And I'm really wanting to. And every now and then, someone will say something and they start smiling and laughing. And it started happening. Every now and then, it would happen. It seemed to be happening down in the pit often. Someone said something, and all of a sudden, you could hear someone start to laugh quite loud. And heads would, look over, and heads would start snapping and looking down into the pit. And all of a sudden, it was like a wave of laughter started to roll and laugh and more laughter. And all of a sudden, the guys that I'm passing buckets to are dropping their buckets, running over to the pit, and they're leaning over and they're listening to whatever it is they're saying, the story, the joke, whatever. And then and the laughter starts to build and until they are laughing so hard. I'm looking over at one guy who's standing on the edge of the pit, and he's got his eyes closed, and he almost starts coughing. He's laughing so hard. And I am so badly wanting to know what they're saying. I'm just like, nah! And they are just erupting in laughter. They're in this moment having this great time. I'm just like, I got nothing right now, but I'm laughing because I'm watching them. And then it starts dying out. And then they go back to the line and start passing pails again. And then it would happen again. And I was telling the team, I said, you wouldn't believe it was amazing to me, number one, to watch these guys just in this moment enjoying themselves. And two things are happening. Number one, I'm going, we are doing back-breaking work. I'm hating life. I'm going, I don't know where the team is right now. How did I get this assignment? but I'm hurting. And they're just passing and laughing and talking away, having a good time. And another thing's going through my mind. I'm going, these guys live in absolute poverty. I've seen their homes. I've actually slept in one of these guys' homes. I know they're not doing this work for pay. They're volunteering. And I'm thinking, for all I know, I don't know if they're going to be struggling to figure out what they're eating tonight. And yet there they are in this moment, passing buckets, laughing, goofing off, having this time that was indescribable, moments of just uncontrollable laughter and joy. It was absolute, like a disconnect for me. Regardless of the corner of the world you live in, regardless of your socioeconomic status, how or where you live, there is a cry of humanity to experience some level of enduring happiness and joy in our lives, isn't there? What creates those feelings? What gives us the joy and enduring happiness? Here in the developed world, it seems we have ideas of how to bring a level of happiness in our lives. You talk to some people and they go, oh man, I get my kicks and thrills out of sports, or I got this hobby. Woo, does it do it for me? Other people say, man, movies, entertainment. For some, it's shopping. They're like, oh, I get to go on the trip. I'm going to do some shopping. I can see and the ladies are all lit up and they're like, yeah, bring it. Dinner clubs, home remodeling, home purchases, cars, boats. Some people will say it's business success. They get their joys when that company balance sheet is on the rise. Some would say it's getting away, boy, Vegas. I'm on my way. For some, it's a tropical vacation. For some I've talked to this week, they say it's when I'm learning, I'm happiest. The list goes on and on and on. So many exciting and great things at our disposal that we can turn to inject some kind of fun into our lives, to raise the happy factor. When I start talking about some of those things, do you have something that comes to your mind when you go, oh yeah, this is fun for me? What is it? What does it for you? I know some of you. I could tell you for you. When I start thinking about this, I go, oh man, give me a nice golf trip. With a few buddies or with my family, close friends. Send me out on vacation with my family. Oh, that's fun. Love that. Competition. For me, that sounds weird. But you get me playing a sport with a bunch of other people that really want to win. Like that aren't saying, oh, we're just playing for fun. That's so pansy. No, come on. Let's go hard, right? And in the end, I'm going to play to win. But in the end, hey, we'll chalk it up. We had a great time, but don't give up. I always tell Kathy, if we're going to play, we're going to play to win, you and me, but don't you say, oh, I'm just playing for fun. That wrecks it for me. You play to the end, right? So that's for me. That's fun. Building things. Send me out into the shop and allow me just to be by myself to build woodworking. Oh, love that. Or a party. Throw on a good party where we can come together and enjoy. Oh, and sit around and chat and laugh. Oh, fun. What's yours? What's your list? What's your fun factor? Now the smiles are starting. You're starting to think about it. What's shocking is that with all of these things that we have at our disposal to bring happiness and joy into our lives, more people are struggling today with sleep issues and anxiety, stress. More people are describing their lives as mundane, as boring, as lifeless. I hear the words meaningless. I hear the words conflicted. I've even heard the words painful. Oh, we experience a lot of thrills. We can go out and temporarily have a night or a weekend or a week of good times. But outside the event, outside the hit, the fix, everyday life can be a very unhappy existence for many. A woman said to me recently, I just need to get a trip booked on the calendar. I don't care when it is, and I don't care where it is. I don't care if it's months away. I just need something to get me through the next few months. It's the joy in our everyday lives that is my concern this morning. The question isn't, how do you produce thrills? Oh, we got that down on lock, don't we? The question is, how do you produce a level of enduring happiness? Are you happy with your life? Does your life, the way it is, produce joy for you? If it is, if you're truly happy with your life, and I know that there would be people here in this room who would say, you know what? Life is pretty good for me, actually. I just want to say how proud I am of you. I would say, well done. And chances are, you've already learned some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about this morning. I tip my hat to you. But if you're here this morning or you're listening to me on the podcast and you haven't been experiencing a lot of happiness, if you've been struggling with your life the way it is right now, this morning I want to invite you to explore something about yourself perhaps you never have. To explore something at a deeper level that could be happening to you without you even realizing it, that's going on down below and you're not aware. And it's affecting your long-term happiness. I'll warn you right now. The exercise that I want to invite you into this morning, it is not easy. That is why I don't think most people will ever do it. It requires you to think deeply about your life. And most importantly, and perhaps for some most painfully, it requires gut-level honesty. So let us begin with a question. In fact, this entire message hinges on your ability to accurately answer this one question. It's a question, again, I don't think most people really have asked themselves. It's actually the same question I asked earlier. What truly makes you happy? Let me give you a hint. It's likely none of the things I mentioned earlier. It's deeper than those things. I want to invite you to do an exercise right now, if you would. Would you close your eyes? Don't worry, no one's looking at you if they're doing their job. Just close your eyes for a second. And think of something that is very important to you. I don't care what it is. There's no right answer here. I don't care if it's your job, your marriage, kid, boat, house, pet, vacation time. Your spiritual journey, it could be anything. Think of something that is very important to you. I want you to ask yourself this question now, thinking about that thing. What does this thing or this person or whatever, what does it give you? What does it give you? Why is it so important to you? Just think about that for a second. Why is it so important to you? All right, keep that in your mind. You can open your eyes. I've been a pastor in church for 22 years now. I love my job. Love it. Most days I can't wait to get out of bed to get to work. Most days. When I go away, I have a tough time not checking my email. I don't like getting too far away. I just like to know what's going on. Staying up on everything. What does my job give me? I've been thinking about that lately. I'd like to say piously, oh, it's not about me, Jeff. It has nothing to do with me. It's all about the others. No, it gives me something. There's something about my job I love that it's giving me. I'll tell you what I think it is. I think my job gives me a sense of significance. I think that's what it does for me. That what I'm doing is actually making a difference. Now, whether I am or not, maybe I'm just delusional, but I actually believe within my job I'm making a difference. And that significance piece is part of what fuels me up and why I think I enjoy my job so much. I've told people many times, if I felt I could no longer make a lasting impact through my role at Friends Church, I would have to leave. I would. I'm learning at the deepest part of me. I have a core value. Jeff Jarvis has a core value of significance for me that needs to be honored. Perhaps I'm not alone in that. Perhaps it's that core value of significance that many who lie in the not-for-profit sector share. I think about the healthcare workers. I think about the teachers. I think about people that are on the front lines doing jobs that aren't maybe necessarily monetarily rewarded for what they're doing, but they feel like they're doing something significant. I think we maybe share a similar core value in that regard. I know another guy, say Mark. He's a guy who loves investments. RSP season, one of his favorites. So dialed in to all the mutual funds, how the stocks have been performing. He's so excited, ready to reinvest. Maybe, you know, I see people smiling. Maybe you know someone like that. He doesn't tell many people about him. Most people wouldn't know this about him. Most people wouldn't know even what he's worth. I know he's worth a lot, but he loves doing it. What do you suppose he gets from his investments? Now, I'm not him, I'm not Mark, but I'm betting that he gets a lot of security from knowing that he has enough stored up, that he won't have to run out. I'm betting that he has a strong internal core value of security. He values highly. That's underneath his passion for investments. Betting. Susan would name her circle of friends as something extremely important to her. But why are friends so important to Susan? Why? What is she getting from her friendships? Belonging? Camaraderie? Loyalty? I would place money that it's somewhere in there. Down below the thing lies something else going on. I'm betting she has a core value that's somewhere in there going, I value highly belonging, a sense of belonging, and I like to know my friends are close, and I keep them close. They're more important to me than anything. I hear people saying that. Is it the friends that you've, or what is underneath that you get from those friends? There is something her relationships are giving her, and that something, whatever it is, can be a strong indicator of one of her core values. Do you know what I mean by a core value? Core value is a principle that you espouse, you subscribe to, that is almost always valid to you. If loyalty is a core value you espouse, under every circumstance is loyalty pretty much valid. For a person that holds loyalty, it's like if you were, I don't care what your reason. I don't care if I was absolutely in the wrong. You stick by me. That's how someone with a core value of loyalty thinks. Depending on your core value, it's almost always true in every circumstance. Think of them as your personal internal code. You don't break code. When you follow your personal core values, deeply seated core values, you are essentially being true to who you are. You know what your core values are? You know what they would be? If I was to ask you, just put you on the spot, have you stand up. Could you list off one or two of them? What you're looking at back here, why don't you just throw that up? This is a partial list of potential core values that you could hold. Only a partial list. I took it from this website, corevaluesinstitute.ca. When you look at just this partial list, can you spot some of these core values that you go, oh, yeah, I like that. Yeah. Or no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Can you find some that resonate deeper than others? Think about this for a second. There is no right or wrong core value, just so in case you're wondering, in case there's a list of, yeah, if you pick that one, shame on you. No, there's nothing like that. There's no right or wrong. These are just core values that likely you have a number of them that lie down deep within you. Listen to me. Understanding what your personal core values are is key to experiencing lasting happiness. It's my belief. Key. When you order your life in a way that honors your God-given core values, I believe it's difficult not to experience some level of enduring happiness. Think about that for a second. Now, let me ask you this. What would happen when you end up in a situation when your core values are in conflict? When you have a deep value, say, of fairness or justice, and you work for a company that you're finding more and more out that they take people for granted. They perhaps use people in unhealthy ways. They take good care of you, but you're finding perhaps the company is guilty of some ill treatment of people in another part of the world. Or of some environmental violation. What happens when you have a deep value of integrity, but your business partner doesn't share the same value? What happens, say, to Susan, whose friends are so valuable to her? What happens to her happiness when her friends get in a big fight with her boyfriend and now don't want to spend as much time with her? What do you suppose happens to her happiness? What's the matter, honey? What do you suppose would be the impact on, say, a guy like Mark, whose financial security is so important to him? If something started to happen, investments started to turn, or someone started to use his resources, say his spouse or his kids, start spending his money, and all of a sudden his financial security is threatened. For someone who values financial security, what do you think happens? What's the matter, honey? The story of Judas in the Bible to me is one of the most disturbing examples of things going on that starts conflicting with internal core values. If you're familiar with Judas, one of Jesus' followers, he sells out Jesus. He sells him out. He sells out his religious leader and friend and confidant for 30 pieces of silver. And then he can't live with himself. and he takes his own life. This Jesus, Judas was one of Jesus' 12 men. He was one of his closest confidants and followers. He would have spent time walking and talking and living with Jesus and seeing all he did while he was on earth. He would have watched Jesus care for and help and heal broken people, making things right. He would have watched this man live out a way of changing the world around him. Judas would have seen it all with his own eyes. And yet, despite all that, one night Judas approaches some chief priests who he knew hated Jesus with a passion, who wanted Jesus dead. Judas approaches them and asks them straight up, "How much money would you give me if I deliver Jesus to you?" They said, 30 pieces of silver. You got yourself a deal. The Bible says that from that point on, Judas started waiting and watching for the right time. What's he thinking? Perhaps he's thinking, you know what? If I could just make some money off of this deal, oh yeah, money. Money would make me happy. Perhaps that's what's going on in his head. We don't really know what's going on in his head. But it wasn't long before he worked the plan and Jesus was handed over to his enemies. Bible says that Judas saw that Jesus had been sentenced to die. It says he was overcome with deep shame and sadness for what he had done. In fact, it says he even tried to reverse it. He went back to the chief priests and said, "You know what? I made a mistake. I should never have done that. Here, look at, I got the money. Please, let's just undo this, can we?" They scoff him. They're going, "Are you kidding? It's not our problem. We got what we need. Bye-bye." Too late. They weren't taking his money. I believe at that point, Judas couldn't live with the internal conflict that was going on. I wonder if in a moment he wasn't holding those coins in his hand thinking, "I really thought this money would do it. I thought it would be enough to bring me some kind of happiness. But it hasn't." Realizing it was too late crossed the value that he had, perhaps with loyalty or friendship or integrity. I don't know what value he crossed in order to try to find financial security. I don't know. But what he realized in that morning, in that moment, I think, is he had another value that was much more important to him than money. And he couldn't live with that conflict. You know what's strange to me? I don't think most of us understand what our core values really are. What's going on below the surface of our lives. Like, I tell you these stories about all these different people and it's easy to go, "Oh yeah, yeah, of course. That's why that guy isn't happy. Of course. That's why Susan isn't laughing now. That's what's wrong with her." And yet, the number of people I've asked recently, "What really drives you? What makes you more happy?" When it comes to most of our lives, most of us really don't know what lies below the things that we love. And many of us make decisions every day that put our core values in conflict. We say yes to the wrong jobs. We chase after stuff and people and achievements that we think are what we really want and what we really need. But in the end, they just don't deliver. After it's all said and done, we're just unhappy. It's weird how many people will say in these moments of just pain and frustration, and they'll tell the story of how a family member or a friend will look at them and say, "How can you not be happy? Snap out of it. Be grateful. Do you know how many people don't have what you have? You know how many people are starving around the world? And look at you. You got more money. You got this. Look at your house. Look at this. And they go, don't know what my problem is. Don't know why I'm not. He said, I don't know. What's the matter, honey? I don't know. Many don't understand what lies below the things. So much heartache can occur when we don't really understand the thing below the thing. I think the dark passenger doesn't want us to know. Doesn't want us to understand our core values. I think he thrives when you don't have a clue about who you truly are, who God really wired you up to be. I think he just laughs. You know Dexter's Dark Passenger? You know how he can just be so scathing? He can sit there and just be laughing at Dexter, and Dexter's in this turmoil. I think our Dark Passenger laughs when he's able to convince us that the key to fixing our unhappiness is not by realigning our lives with our core values. No, 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 no. Come over here. You just need a little fix of some fun. You need a trip. Get away. You need to go and tie one on with some friends is what you need. Huh? I just need a new car. I just want a new pair of jeans. I just got to go out shopping. And don't get me wrong. I'm not here to say that any of those things I just mentioned necessarily are evil or wrong. I'm not here to say that. But I think there are some people who those things are a complete contradiction to what really is going on inside their lives. Or it's a distraction. Something over here is crossing the core value. Something is in the way over here. And this is just a, hey, 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 look over here. Why don't you try this? How do you know? How do you know when the thing that you're going after, you're going, oh, I can't wait, is not one of these, but something that's actually going to fix it? I don't know about you, but sometimes it's how I feel in the morning, the morning after, a few days later. You know what I'm saying? There are times when in the moment, I'm going, oh, that would feel so good. I say yes. And the next morning I'm going, oh, why did I do that? There's other times when in the moment I go, no, I'm not doing it. And the next morning I wake up and I go, I love you, Jeff. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going crazy here, right? You know that feeling when you're going, yes, something worked in what I just did here, or something went completely sideways on me right now, and I'm not feeling the way I wanted to feel or where I thought I would. You go and put on that new coat and you go, this is not doing what I thought it would do. There are times when I watch some get this and live according to their core values. I'm struck by a guy named David in the Bible. I mean, the guy made mistakes, but I'm telling you, this guy again and again, as I read his story, lived out, knew who he was. There's this one part of his journey that is just so fascinating to me. He's being hunted down, literally. King Saul, his boss, so jealous of him, has commissioned his army to get out and kill David. David has done nothing wrong but do everything he's been asked to do. He's been outstanding. And now he's running for his life. His whole life has been turned upside down. He hasn't seen his family in who knows how long. He's living in caves. He's got a few close men hanging out with him. He's literally running for his life. And his boss wants to take him out. And he ends up one night, while the enemy was sleeping, walking into the camp and standing at the very head of the man who wants to kill him while he sleeps, King Saul. And he's standing over him. Can you imagine being hunted? A guy who has thrown spears at you, has literally almost taken out your life. And you're standing over him with it. And it says that Saul's spear, his boss's spear, is right beside his head. David's right-hand man is looking at David going, please, let me kill him. I will do it. You don't even have to. One shot, and it's all over. Our lives go back to normal. Please, David, please. David says, don't you dare. No one can lay a hand on the Lord's anointed king and not be guilty. And he goes on to say, may the Lord keep me. And I'm sure he's saying, as hard as it is right now, may the Lord keep me from laying a hand on his anointed king. He looks at Abishai and says, grab the spear and the water jug and let's go. When you know the story, the willpower, the fight, everything inside him is saying, you want to make your life better, David? Just do it. One foul, and this goes away. He says, no. What is going on in that moment? I'm looking at David. I'm going, David, you fool. And he's going, David, I believe. David is saying, I want to look at myself in the mirror because something inside me says, no, when God puts someone in charge over me, I don't raise my hand against him. Something inside him, I think he had a core value of loyalty. I think something going on inside of him is saying, that would not be right. Maybe it was integrity. He's going, that would not be right. I want to live with myself. I want to sleep at night. I want to look myself in the mirror and say, David, you did the right thing. There was something about David and the way that he ordered his life at times when he could have done so many other things, but he said, no, this is who you are, David. Live there. Be that person. I knew ours over time. Okay. Yeah, I get wrapped up in these things, and do you know who you are? Do you know who you really are? Beyond the little thrills and the little things you go, oh, I love that. That really makes me happy. No. Do you really know what you need? Let me tell you something. I would love, Paul, a writer in the Bible, he said this, when you are living a spirit-directed life, the fruit of the spirit, the results of it, one of the results is joy in your life. I'm here to tell you that God can direct you to experiencing joy in your life. He can. And I would love to end this message by saying, okay, here's the magic formula to finding out who you really are. Here's all you got to do. I would love to say, okay, now we're going to pray a prayer and it's going to happen. No. Here's the bad news. This thing that I'm talking about today, this journey of figuring out who you really are, some have been on with all diligence for years, and they're just starting to kind of get a little bit of a hint of what it is down deep that makes them tick. Some of you have been on this journey, and you're figuring out. Some of you stumbled on it, and you're going, oh, man. I'm here to invite you this morning to begin. To begin the hard work of figuring out who you really are, who God wired you up to be, and to start making decisions according to your design. Some of you are in a world of pain right now, and we can point to a lot of things that happened around or whatever. I would just say, could it be, partially, due to our decisions that have sometimes crossed grains with the core values God has given us deep down inside. I invite you into doing the work this morning. Can you put up that website? Will you go? You're one step ahead. I'm closing on this. Would you, maybe right now you're saying, Jeff, you got my attention. I know I'm doing this. I know. Would you start? Here's just a simple start. The question I asked earlier, what does that thing give you? If you could just sit in there, go away, be silent, just think about that. That alone in and of itself. But here's something else. To go to this, and this is just not a magical website. It just lists a bunch of different core. Would you spend some time just reeling through the core values on that thing and seeing what pops out and start praying about it? Start praying about it because God can guide you to figuring out who you really are. And when you get there, when you start figuring out something that you're going, well, I know this about me to be true, Well, then the next challenge is living according to that. Oh, we could take up a year talking about this whole subject. I'm done. Let's pray. I pray you will not shirk off the hard work of figuring this out. God, guide us. Guide us to experiencing something like David. Some of these characters in the Bible that seem to understand them so well. Who they really were. May we commit to the work. And in that process, may you take it the rest of the way. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen. Amen. May God bless you and keep you, and may his face shine upon you and give you peace this week as you do your homework. Hey, I want to just quickly make a couple announcements. Pretty excited about. Good morning. Welcome again, everyone. Glad you're here at Friends Church this morning. You braved the roads. I'm Jeff. I'm the lead pastor here, and I want to make you aware of a couple things that you should be pretty excited about. One is Easter is right around the corner, and we're planning a big Easter celebration here. This is huge in the on the Christian calendar. It's a big, big time, and we have great reason to be celebrating. But this year, we're going to do something different. We're going to tell the Easter story through some of today's greatest music. Stuff that you'll hear on the radio, Chili Peppers, City in Color, help me out here, band. I'm going blank. Okay, so we got some great, Journey, Lumineers, thank you. Sorry? Fleetwood Mac. Okay, so, I mean, it is going to be a great morning. Does it get better than that? So you want to, if you have friends that are open to a spiritual journey, maybe they wouldn't call themselves church types. Oh, we love those types, okay? So invite them out. Just say, hey, you got to check this out. You just invite them out. That's March 31st. It's happening in two Sundays. So plan on that make plans to be here. Secondly, don't know if you're aware about it, but those that don't know, we've joined forces with organizations all over the world with the goal of eradicating chronic malnutrition. As a community, we want to be a part of the solution. There's a lot of problems in our world, but that is one we say we can help beat. And 5 years ago, we targeted the village of Rio Azul, because number one, it was one of the worst hit areas in the entire world with regard to chronic malnutrition, one of the highest rates. And so in that time, we've done a lot there. We have built infrastructure and we've focused on education. We've made sure that we are working toward achievable goals, and now we're seeing the fruit of it. And a number of weeks back, February 10th, we reported on the incredible data that we're bringing back that's showing we are beating chronic malnutrition. It is dropping in this area. And so our current project is removing brown water and sewage from the village. I won't go into it, but this is an exciting two-phase project. We said we're going to tackle phase one, which is removing, building the infrastructure to remove it half of the village's brown water and sewage. And next year, we're going to remove the other half. And so it's the infrastructure to build that and create that. So this year, in order to do that, we committed as a community to raise $66,500. We've already gone through the math. What they are coming up with, the Guatemalan government, the regions, even the little impoverished village of Rio Azul, what they're coming up with is astounding. They believe in this project. And so 66.5 is a big goal for Friends Church. But we think they are tackling an even greater challenge in the amount that they've committed to. So anyways, we're excited about this. We've already shipped 30 grand. Woohoo! That's great news. But last Sunday, we took the offering to raise the other 36,500 bucks. Remember, we've been in your face about this. Some of you are going, would you enough already? And we're going, no, what's your number? What can you give toward this goal? Because you're making an investment that's going to change lives for years and years and years. There's nothing greater than what we're about to do here. So anyways, people came last week. Some of you slept through. It was daylight savings, all right? So you enjoyed your coffee. You had church in bed. I get that that happens. But with the people that came last week and the money that's been trickling in this week, we hit the goal. We hit the goal. Is that not exciting? So we beat it. $36,500. Someone came, phoned or emailed me and said, where are we at? And I said, gee, I don't know what the latest number is. Went in. Shirley, our bookkeeper, came back, showed me the number. I said, this is the number. This is how far we have to go. He says, all right, it's done. Here it goes. And since then, more money is trickling in. Someone was coming up to me this morning saying, hey, Jeff, I wasn't here last week. I'm coming through with it. Relax, I am coming. I went, right on, because we got phase two. So this is a great thing. Even it hasn't ended, right? So even if you were praying about it and God gave you your number, don't lay back and go, oh, good, someone took care of my number for me. Don't do that. Apply your number to next year's funds. Wouldn't it be great if there was no lag in time and we could get started on phase two right after phase one? So if you weren't able to be a part of the offering last week, you still got an opportunity. All right, I'm going to give you another one this morning. So feel free, if you need an offering envelope for that, we'll give you that chance in a second. So just thought I'd be the bearer of good news. Sometimes I'm up here giving you bad news. This morning, I get to be the good guy. So, hey, I think you guys should give yourselves a big round of applause. That is something to be very proud of. Thank you very much for supporting Friends Church and the vision of eradicating malnutrition, chronic malnutrition.